I have to say, the kind of culture that I see at WeWork is unmatched. How they bring the whole performance orientation with people at heart, I haven't seen.
There's also an aspirational value to be at WeWork, right? So oh, I think that is what you all also build on.
There is a secret sauce that is there.
Let's talk about some of the best work that Devo has put out that you feel very, very proud of.
Actually, there are a couple. I think the one that comes to my mind first is the campaign called Proper Lady. Another campaign was definitely Suede Gully.
Visually, that video was amazing. You all shot it in some of those by lanes up north, yeah. Right?
Welcome to the fourth episode of the India PR Show. Today, I have Debo Smita Majumdar as our fourth guest, and she is the CMO of WeWork India. And she shares her journey from being an incidental marketeer to having a glorious career where she's worked with some really large organizations like Puma and many others like Embassy. And right now she's leading the marketing function of WeWork India. And she talks about her journey in sports and how sports has made her a better professional. And this woman is all heart. I'm very excited to talk to her. So tune in.
Debo, welcome to the India PR Show. I'm so glad that we are talking here on the India PR Show. You know, Debo, not many people, you are more known for your roles in Puma, you know, Embassy, and now at WeWork, but not many people know about that you were a professional athlete in your early growing up years. You stumbled upon PR, you know, and then, you know, things happen. You, from the agency side, you moved to various and different roles in marketing. So how has your career been? What were the biggest milestones in your career? Talk to us about that.
Firstly, thank you for having me. I mean, I never thought we'd be having a conversation over some lights and mic because we've worked together and we've had some great conversations outside. So happy to bring it here. And well, my career, it's been very, very unconventional, if one has to put it in one word. Yes, I mean, I started off back in the days, all I wanted to do was to play tennis. My father just said, you know, you don't have to get great marks, just pass, don't fail, because Bengali, you know, household, getting good, you know, grades was important. But I had a free pass that just passed and played tennis well. Only dream I had was that I'm going to play Wimbledon someday. But early on, reality hit. While I played at a fairly decent level in the national and state circuit, but you realize how far away you are from that dream. And also, like, at that time, career sports, tennis didn't really have a future. Like, where do you go once the sports really ends? What are the avenues that are open to you? All those questions started bothering me when I was about 16, 17. And I come from a fairly modest background. So I did want to think about these things. And having played a sport and been independent from a very early age, I knew that's something I wanted to have for myself. So I think one big risk I took, I think when I was turning into an adult, when I was 18, I told my father, maybe, you know, playing tennis professionally is not going to take me where you and I hope to. I might, like, my talent is limited and my resources are limited. Maybe I need to focus on my education and build out a career. It wasn't easy to do that because from early on, that's only one thing you knew. And then you decide you will take this on as the next step of your life. And it wasn't easy, okay? Mm-hmm. So while tennis helped me get into a very good university, that's Jadavpur University in Kolkata, I don't know if you're aware.
I know.
So, you know, suddenly thrown, like, because of my tennis I got in, but there were these, the creme de la creme of, you know, arts student had gotten through, okay? So then you are sitting in those classes with some brilliant minds and everything is going above your head, like what's good, you know, those really intellectual conversations. So it took me, I think, the entire graduation to grasp what is going on. But I must mention, during that time, I made some incredible friendships. Okay, friendships which just didn't mean like sitting and having a good time, but they really helped me understand, like they would spend time with me, help me understand, you know, the length and breadth of literature is what I was studying. And that kind of allowed me to get more interested in the subject. And, you know, when you get interested and you understand the nuances is when you start picking up. So that's when, and also because we had made a great set, you know, group of friends, we wanted to continue being with each other. So for all these reasons, we decided to do our masters also from the same university.
So you did your masters in literature from Jadavpur?
Literature from Jadavpur okay. University.
So just hold on. So from being a professional tennis player, you ended up doing masters in literature from Jadavpur University.
Yeah. Okay. Imagine. And that too, like, yeah, when I was 10 years old, I probably wouldn't have, like, in 20, I'd be doing this. I probably wouldn't have ever imagined, right? So, yeah, so there it was. I did my masters in English and I got through fairly well. Did, like, I didn't get a first class, but I was mid, like a 57%, which was considered pretty decent in arts, etc., from a good university. But I didn't know what is the way forward. And when I looked around, either people were getting into teaching or doing PhD. Again, none of those were up my sleeves, right? So I'm figuring, okay, what do I do next? What kind of jobs do people with literature get? And I didn't have an answer. And honestly, I didn't have any guidance to say, okay, these are the steps you need to take. These are the various avenues.
The guidance was not there at all. It was just either you become an engineer, you become a doctor, or you do a PhD or
a lawyer maybe. Yeah. And arts was not, again, arts was typically about to teach and to do for, academia is what you get into. And that was not the thing. So I stumbled into PR at that stage where I met somebody who was running a PR agency and said that, you know, and because of my literature and you could come and start. I'm like, okay, I will give this a shot. And honestly, I don't even remember the name of the agency. It's very shameful. But because it's just, and while I was there, I realized, okay, what is PR? It's where you talk with journalists and you write and you, this very little understanding. And I realized, you know, this way I can't build a career on such fragmented knowledge. Maybe it is important to get a formal education if there is any. So then I looked out, I did my bit of research. I realized there's a place called IIMC in Delhi. There is Xavier's Bombay. There is Jamia Millia. There's Jamia. There's another, yeah, in Delhi. Mm-hmm. So there are these, some options are there. So I sat for the entrance test for each of these. And I got through IMC and Xavier's. Bombay, I think, is what I was also favorable. And so were my parents, because you feel it's safer than Delhi. And that's when I moved to Bombay to study. So this was a that was a post-graduation degree. This is a they have a post-graduation diploma.
Yes.
So I did that diploma course. You know, that is where I think a lot of things changed for me. I could build my confidence back in a subject matter apart from everything else I've done in the past. I actually studied a lot. I think you could call me that time. I was like a bookworm because I had something to prove. I had something to really get out of this. So, and I'm very happy to say I came first in class there. And I didn't know what that...
sweet.
Yeah, because, you know, in my entire schooling days, I was far away from that. I'm like, okay, this feels nice. And more than that, that gave me a huge confidence. I think if you ask me one big milestone in my life, that could be one starting milestone.
Yeah, because I moved from Calcutta to Bombay too, and I know the feeling of doing well over there. And definitely if Calcutta feels like, oh, you've reached a large city like Bombay and you're doing well, it does feel good. So I can relate to that.
Yeah, it was special. And then I got through Genesis Burson Marsteller. It was at that time considered one of the biggest PR agency. And they had something called the ALP program. Okay, what is that? Where it's a separate interview where they train you also and you go through your stint of client servicing also. But they have like every quarter, like a 1 month of staying and more learning. So it was more immersive learning, more presentations. Like probably the experiences that you wouldn't have so early on in your career in PR through those modules like crisis communication, how do you do pitches, ton of those learning. I think that was very, very immersive. And I think my learning really grew. And it was all of us staying in one place. So I think even the people skill, I think, you know, one thing that we don't talk about, that in your corporate journey, it's just not work. It's about dealing with people. Different sets of people with different mindsets, different background. And I think that is something that you don't learn consciously. But that's something takes you a long way, because you... end of the day, you're in the business of people. You're constantly trying to convince people or sell something to people.
Yeah, irrespective, you're a CEO, you're a marketing head. Correct, you need to deal with people.
Correct. So I think that's where, you know, staying with strangers from different parts of the country. We were all together going through that ALP course. And I think that was quite exciting. And then my first client, like serious client, was GSK, GlaxoSmithKline Consumer Healthcare.
Okay.
Yes, but the consumer healthcare piece. So I remember Horlicks, launch of Women's Horlicks was one of the
exciting... I would have never associated you with that.
That's what I think. Very strange. So there was Women's Horlicks at one go, then I also did Adidas for a little while. In a agency setup, you have multiple brands, accounts, and under that vertical whatever account. So yeah, I did that. I did Pizza Hut, I did KFC. So yeah, bunch of clients. It was a lot of learning, so to speak. But yeah, PR is what I was doing, what I had studied, and I knew this is the way forward. And yeah, that is what it was. And after that, I worked at MSL for a couple of years thereafter. But you know, at that time, everyone said moving from an agency to a brand is supposed to be the
big
career growth. Yeah. So of course, I mean, if everyone's saying that is what it is, you also believe that should be your next step. So the first opportunity that came my way from moving from agency to the brand side was with Sony 6.
Okay.
And I felt, because it's a sports channel and, you know, sports
your background
being my background, it's the perfect fit, etc. And to be fair, it was very easy. I mean, one thing I have to say, like, there are certain things you think that once you go onto the brand side, life gets easier. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different kind of pressure.
Right.
Because in agency, the pressure is really about, you know, managing multiple clients, delivering at their timelines, you know, and to ensure everything is running on track.
Mm.
So it's really about the breadth of work and the different kind and the breadth of work, really. But I think when you go into that one brand, you have to, your the buck stops at you.
Yeah.
Because you could be dependent on 5 other agencies, but if things don't get delivered, it's you who is pulled up for. I think that is the biggest learning that I had moving from an agency to a brand. I, of course, missed, because agency also had a lot of like adrenaline rush, right? Like you go win businesses and all of you come together and you, you know, build your plans. You're working late at night, building presentations. Then it gets a little, so initially it takes like, is it too slow? So I also felt like that what really, because that time you're also discovering what works for you.
Hmm.
Do you like a really like atmosphere which is really alive and throws challenges at you and you're problem solving constantly? Is that your jam? Or you like to be, you know, thinking, wondering, taking your time to develop that plan and seeing it roll out in a pace and pace it out?
Hmm.
What's your jam? Like you're constantly figuring. So I think Sony 6 is where I was realizing, yeah, this is good. I like what I do, but I need a little more to play with.
Agencies prepare you for the worst.
Yeah.
Or like,
that's where you're talking about being a hustler. I think that's what you become if you've been in an agency, and especially in a PR agency. Maybe I'll talk about that later, why I feel that way. I truly feel like that.
Mm.
But so that was with Sony 6. It was fun. It was nice. It was a lot of learning. And you know, that is where, because you're on the brand side, you're part of a marketing department, right? So your exposure to other things in marketing also happens. In a PR agency, it doesn't because you're limited to. So that's where, you know, when campaign plan was happening, I remember the World Cup, the football World Cup, Sony 6 was doing. So we had done a campaign with John Abraham. And that was the first time that, you know, I was part of when the campaign happens. And because it was such an open culture, it wasn't like, okay, PR was only going to do PR. And I had a lot of thoughts, ideas, and I really realized, okay, I'm really interested in marketing. There is the scope is so much more, you know? Yeah. And that's why I saw myself really, like, there were a lot of other show launches. There were a lot of athletes that were being brought. So there was a bit of PR. And even though marketing was not in my role, I saw myself being drawn to it and contributing to it, etc. I think my interest in marketing actually happened on ground in the most organic sort of a way, because it wasn't... Right. And no one would say no, because the culture was quite inclusive. And they said, if good ideas are coming from anywhere, yeah, let's do it. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. And I would also be a one enthu cutlet. I wanted to go for the shoot. I want to see how things happen when the agency pitches happen. So I also was pretty much into things, okay? So that was going good. And that's when an opportunity from Puma India came my way. Again, for I was in Bombay this time, right? With first I was in Delhi with Genesis. Then I was with Bombay in Sony 6. And then this role for Puma came for Bangalore.
Yeah.
And that was going to be a corporate communication, brand communication.
That's when I met you.
That is where we met. Mm. But funnily though, maybe we never spoke, when they were doing the interview, I said, you know, why would I want to move from Bombay to Bangalore for a PR role? Is it possible that you give me a role such where PR is the majority of what I do, but also a role cut out for in marketing, in which if I deliver, then if that role could be expanded. If not, then we both know there was a fair choice. Probation could be the time frame in which you evaluate and take that ahead.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I very clearly said, you know, if I don't say, how will they know?
Hmm.
Right? Because end of the day, I am interested in marketing. I probably don't have much to show for except for these little instances of marketing in inputs I have given. So I will ask for it and very clearly say that if I fail, you can take it away. Anyway, you are giving me a... And they said, yeah, why not? I mean, they were open. And because I think, again, sports, because I have a sports background, Puma is a sports company. Probably they thought there could be, again, an organic match. And I think there was. And like, I think you know, I know that was the biggest... shift in my career, so to speak. Yeah. I think one of the biggest risks I took in terms of putting a step, going all in, saying I'm going to do this and then really putting myself out there. I don't think I have pushed myself to such limits as much as I have done in my stints
at Puma.
Like, I have really pushed everything. I brought in everything I have to make it work, because you know that wanting to win, I think that whole sports spirit came in and I just was relentless.
And actually also when you joined Puma was at the number 4 or number 3 position. They weren't the number 1 back then. The journey from being number 3 to number 1 was also with very aggressive marketing, and you were a part of the team and, you know, driving campaigns back then. So I can imagine it was very, very hectic back then.
It was very hectic, but I must say it was very, very fulfilling. It was, it was like the career high that everyone should have at some point in their lives. And it was really, really good. And it was very high paced and a lot of travel, a lot of quick turnarounds, big campaigns. It was very exciting. But like you said, everything, you reached a point, an optimum level, you feel. I'm sure one could feel, you could. But also you feel you don't want to limit yourself to a certain sector, a certain industry. Because life is about learning, right? And I'm somebody who is ready to throw myself into newer sectors, newer learnings. Because that's what keeps me going. Because I truly feel marketing as a function is pretty... You know, if you know marketing, you'll be able to deliver in any sector as long as you're interested and you're able to grasp it.
Yeah.
So, and I really wanted to challenge myself there. And that's how...
How long were you in Puma?
5.5 years.
5.5 years, okay.
Yeah, 5.5 years. So yeah, the journey of... see, honestly, when you're working that much, you're not thinking, what are you doing to get to number one?
Mm.
But when we got to number one, it was, of course, it was a collective effort. The sales team, the business team, the marketing. I think everything was firing from everywhere. And of course, the moment of huge celebration, and we did that.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean, Puma days were good, and I think I met some of my dearest friends.
During
that phase. There's lots to talk about if one were to. So yeah, that was Puma. But then, like I said, I also didn't want to limit my learnings to one way, because you also get very comfortable, right?
Yeah.
Because you think, I've done this. But so I wanted to put myself out there. So I tried my hand a little bit in automobile. I was in Porsche for a bit, but it didn't click for me. And that's when I think embassy happened. I think it took everyone by shock, saying that,
yeah,
I mean, this is such a major shift. I was like, why not? It has come my way.
Yeah.
And it wasn't only real estate. The best thing about embassy is being part of that group. You were actually getting to see so many different industries. There was hospitality, there was education, there was commercial real estate, there was residential real estate. I mean, to know that with one opportunity, you get understanding of so many different industries. And it also helps you to understand, okay, what kind of marketing works where. But again, you know, that stint was when you're doing with so many different things. It again didn't feel that
you're not going deep into one thing.
Yeah, which I, again, that's when I realized that's what I really like, you know, being in the driver's seat to drive, to get down to the very, you know, like I like to be fully involved.
Yeah.
And I think that's when the WeWork, which is part of the embassy group, but when the WeWork opportunity came in for me, it was one of the best opportunities again. Honestly, it's been, 8 months now? And I feel I've been there pretty much for a long time. I'm very much part of the system. And honestly, I've really loved my time there. And I hope to be there for a long time and do some great work.
Yeah. So it's been, obviously WeWork, again, as a company, has been into so much of growth and action phase, and we will get to talking, at length about it. But do you think CMOs trained in PR work differently? And obviously there's a bias in my question, but do let me know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I do have a very strong thought on this. See, I feel when you look at mass media, like media industry, right? Honestly, PR is pretty much in the pecking order, it's quite low. While the journalists were also, it was the power of pen.
Yeah.
They were writing. And they, of course, they both had their enough and more resources to play with. While PR had the least amount of resource, but had the toughest job at hand. Because it's completely earned media. You had to communicate something from one party to another party without letting the story drop.
Yeah.
Secondly, crafting the whole story to be able to build, what the client or the brand that you are servicing, how that brand needs to be represented in a most authentic, true way, because PR couldn't be about, advertising where you can be a little bit boastful, or it's a very, you have to speak the truth and PR has such an important role in terms of real crisis, right?
Yes.
We all know that. So I feel PR hasn't got its due in the world of media.
I could not agree more. Actually, one of the reasons you asked, why do we call it the India PR show? That's to bring the spotlight back on PR. At the end of the day, I think, people talk about PR people need to do their own PR. But I think the fact is that, it's on us PR people to really, get the spotlight on us, because I feel that PR offers so much, and PR's role is changing, right? From, influencer marketing 5 years, 6 years ago, influencer marketing, there was a question, who is going to take that? Will creative agencies take it? Advertising agencies do influencer marketing? But PR people are just trained to be so much more.
Correct. And again, going back to your question, I think PR is where the real hustle is.
Yeah.
So because you are fighting against so many odds, again, like like I said, no one's really giving you that. They're giving you that little time.
Yeah.
And in that, you have to have your understanding, you have to deliver. And I think that's a huge strength that anyone who's done PR in an agency or in a, I think agency more than a brand, I'd say, because that's where the real hustle is.
Mm.
And it goes a long way in, you know, in marketing. And honestly, because most marketers would have not had PR background, when handling overall marketing, they don't know the nuances, other things, they get it, but PR is very different.
They're very different, yeah.
It's very different. If you've not had experience, then you will struggle to put everything,
the whole story out.
And integration is the way to do good marketing, right? And when we talk about integration, earned and paid media go so hand in hand, they complement each other. So when what comes in, what goes out, when, how do you really plan that through, comes with your understanding, I feel. So I think PR has definitely played a very big role in my growth as a marketer. And I'm very thankful I've had those days, because, you know, there have been people who've, you know, made funny comments about your real work starts now.
Really?
Yes. I don't want to take names, but there have been such statements thrown at me, but I will forever be thankful, because I think a lot of learning has come from there, how to deal with different, to work under pressure, to deliver like very stringent timelines, because it's a pitch. How do you sell? End of the day, pitching is selling.
How do you deal with difficult people on the other side?
How do you, when they're constantly challenging you, because that's, so it's a lot. And you know, like client servicing, how do you do it? How do you deal, again, crisis situation? How do you, like, it's a lot of learning. And yeah, I think PR definitely has played an important role in shaping me, because I don't, to be very honest, I don't have formal education in marketing, like a proper MBA degree, etc. Whatever I have learned has
been on the job,
right? And given PR was a pretty significant part of my working life, it definitely has molded me the way I am.
Debo, let's talk about some of the best work that Debo has put out that you feel very, very proud of.
Actually, there are a couple. I think the one that comes to my mind first is the campaign called Proper Lady. It is a campaign which is very, very close to my heart for multiple reasons, right? Like there was, of course, a business reason why we wanted to, women's campaign. We wanted to grow the women's business. This is back in the days in Puma, women's business. And how do we make a very inclusive communication? And I really wanted to push the bar. And what I lucked upon is the team that came together with similar passion and like that fire to really do something. To us, this was not work. It became, honestly, it might sound a little too much, but honestly, it felt like a purpose. At that point, that campaign, and I'm just not talking about the core team in Puma, the agency that was working with us, the director who shot, like, everyone
was very involved.
Very, very involved and strong point of view. So even when we would like thrash out everyone, and if one point of view had to win, it really had to stand out and say why this should happen, because everyone's point of view had a lot of meat. So that's why when all these minds who are completely involved and throwing great ideas, and in that brainstorming, you are going with the best idea, somewhere created magic. And it was not easy, right? You had multiple, like, if you see, the cast was very, you had the athlete, you had Duti Chand, you had Mary Kom, you had Sara Ali Khan, you had like a bunch of different women from different, how do you bring it together? And it was really about, you know, like we were challenging the whole narrative about women are always told to be proper.
Before you get into this, can you just describe what Proper Lady was, campaign? I know it, but I think for everybody, and you know, when you're adding pillars to it, just what was Proper Lady?
So campaign? Proper Lady was questioning the whole premise of proper. Because, you know, you have seen historically in our own households or in books, women, or in literature or in cinema, women are expected to talk a certain way, sit a certain way, be a certain way, express a certain way. And everything there was a playbook, right, of which how a woman needs to be. And Proper Lady campaign actually challenged this whole notion that there is no your proper, no one else can define. And you define your proper. So if you want to laugh, you know, like laugh out loud, you don't, that's your proper. If you want to sit with, you know, your legs doing like crossed over, that's your proper. Or you want to sit with your legs spread, that's your proper.
Yeah.
You want to, you know, be, you want to cry and not hide your tears in a place when you're emotionally charged. It's your choice and you can exercise it. So that was the real premise of Proper Lady, and you can understand how all of us felt about it. So it was a beautiful experience. And you know, when that much of genuine emotions come together, that's why the campaign turned out the way it did. And I remember the excitement that we had when it went live. So I think that's always going to remain very, very close to my heart. Another campaign was definitely Suede Gully. I think it's a super cool, one of the super cool product in Puma. It was it's a suede which is hitting 50 years, and it was about, you know, celebrating street culture.
Yeah.
And you know, when you look at street culture in US, it's New York, it's Bronx, etc. And if you really wanted to be true to street culture in India, you can't be English, right? Because street is really graffiti and a lot of music that's happening, which is local, rap, etc. So we created an anthem, a multilingual anthem, getting artists like there is Khasi, there is Prabdeep doing Punjabi, there is Tamil that Madurai Sojourns did, and Divine put it together. It was, again, one incredibly...
Visually, that video was amazing. Y'all shot it in some of those bylanes up north, right?
So we went to many places. Yeah, we were, again, very true to the culture, right? So when we were doing Khasi Blood, we were up in northeast. When we were doing Madurai, we did it in Madurai. Then we did Bombay, some streets. So yeah, we definitely... Because we wanted to be very true to... what they are saying, like where, what exists. And that was again a very, very fulfilling campaign. But you know, more than campaign, few things which were very exciting, I think, was bringing Kareena as a brand ambassador for Puma. Because at that time, Puma's target audience, you know, were Gen Z, young, 16, 17. They were young, fit, very different, while Kareena's age group was a little more mature. And so, and she was already married, and she had just delivered. So why would she stick, right? And we wanted to be a very inclusive brand. And funny thing is, for us, it was very important because one of our biggest platform to communicate was Instagram. And Kareena was never wanted to be on Instagram. So I remember I had multiple meetings with her. And one of the things I had to do was to tell her why she needed to be on Instagram and how her being part of this needs her to be on Instagram. And I think finally she did agree. And her first post was with Puma, and I think that was
so your most challenging and most rewarding work would be to get Kareena on Instagram and Kareena on board.
Yeah, I think it was quite interesting, but I won't say there are, of course, other campaigns. I think one being the Do You campaign, which was my first women's campaign. And honestly, that was my first biggest campaign because it was a campaign which has many legs. It has a huge on-ground event where we were actually attempting a Guinness Book of World Record, if you remember. So... you know, and that was unheard of in our industry, and we were doing it, and we were doing it like in a proper way. We got in touch with those Guinness, and you had to have X number of women to plank a proper way to actually...
And that was the buzz. The buzz was real for that one.
Yeah, I know. And you know, I experienced it because before that, of course, we had done the whole social campaign. We had all the different celebrities talking about Do You and about their, you know, involvement in this whole campaign. And we had shot multiple videos. All that was out. There was a strong influencer campaign that followed, which also did very well. And the final event was the you know, it was the final cherry on top. And if we didn't, then the whole campaign would have
this was in
apart.
Bombay, right? Where everybody did
Geo, the yes. Geo grounds. Oh my God. And yeah, and we actually could get those many women to do the plank, yeah. hold it properly. There were actually inspection to see whether the pond was right. It went up to that, you know, with that precision. But to win it, it was so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was all these women who came when they got the certificates that they've been part of, to see the joy in their faces as if this was really something that meant to them. To say that, you know, marketing is a little deeper also. You can make differences, small differences, though, in people's life. You give them that moment of joy participating in an event where they feel part of a bigger community and they have a good time and they go back with a certification of something they feel happy about. So
the fact that you're remembering this after so many years, so obviously that expression and how you made others feel was such an important part of the campaign.
It was a very important part. I remember we hadn't slept like, you know, many nights because of this. But when it happened, we all had like tears of joy. Honestly, I don't know. Is it me and the kind of people I work with? Everyone is so
passionate.
So work is emotion. Yeah. Work is not just something you do. I think those are some of the like best campaigns and challenging campaigns back in the days.
So now let's just talk about your current role at WeWork.
Yes.
So, but let's take a step back and say what drew you to the role at WeWork?
I think first I'll say what drew me to WeWork. See, I've worked at many different places. I have to say the kind of culture that I see at WeWork is unmatched. How they bring the whole performance orientation with people at heart, I haven't seen. Mm-hmm. This company is so beautifully people oriented that the fact that it's, you know, growing at such a great scale, it doesn't feel like, okay, you are constantly on a hamster wheel.
Yeah.
There is this beautiful balance that the environment provides, which I find absolutely spectacular in this brand. And I think that's what, of course, in terms of one side, and the people, like the leadership, the people, they all, the value system is very, very aligned. So I think that's what really sets WeWork apart from a lot of organizations, very special.
Including WeWork Global, right?
Including WeWork Global. See, I don't know about the culture really, because I think culture is very, you build what is around. But I mean.
Coming to India,
I can definitely say the business, of course, the business acumen, how India has grown. I mean, everyone knows there's not... I don't need to say it's out there. I mean, while the global market has panned out in a certain way, India has been growing and it continues to grow. And it's a very good place from business point of view. But I think while business is very, very critical, I think what also makes WeWork so special is its culture. Secondly, the member experience. You know, honestly, the kind of people that you see work out of WeWork itself can be a very inspiring thing to go back to every day. You know, you see young entrepreneurs, because, you know, funny thing, people think WeWork or any co-working is more for co-working. It's actually just not co-working. There is a proper offices, like we have something called the private office, where large offices take up space, and it makes a lot of sense, right? You come to a great space, you have your own private office, but there is also a community out there if you want to be a part of, and it's operated by, it's very easy, and the art and the way the spaces are built is so happy and inspiring. So I think even as a space and the member experience as at WeWork that we cultivate for them is also very special, because we treat our members as the most important pillar of our business, because we got to treat them right. So we do a bunch of stuff for them, and I think that also is very, very special in the way WeWork India operates. Marketing, of course, is something, I mean, the good thing is it's constantly evolving. There was like, you know, if we're so open to doing new things. So we are constantly trying to do, because we talk about products, we talk about brand, we talk about member experience. All of this comes under marketing. So the marketing ecosystem is again very different from, because it's tech also. There is digital product also. There is real estate product also. There is the brand also. So you get to do a bunch of very different things, which I find very exciting to do over here. And, you know, again, we go into new markets.
Yeah.
That also becomes a very different ballgame altogether, right? Because you're a global brand, but you want to make it relatable to that market. It goes into a point of micro markets also. So say like maybe in a certain tech park, you have a lot of enterprises taking up your spaces, while in the city center, you find a lot of, freelancers, etc., using your space.
So I think there's also an aspirational value to be at WeWork, right? So I think that is what you all also build on.
Yeah, because what WeWork brings is like, there is a secret sauce that is there.
Yeah. What is that? If you can... just talk a bit about that. What makes WeWork so aspirational to people?
Firstly, the stories that come out of WeWork. Because, you know, if WeWork, you know, firstly with entrepreneurs, we are actually, we have a support system which from incubation to now funding. We actually handhold and really support that ecosystem, and we are constantly doing a lot. So I think that is one large piece of what, if you know, WeWork Labs is...
That's a new thing. You are also kind of helping with... funding,
yes,
the right
still
startups.
Now, yeah, funding is something we've started, but it was all like, but the incubation and supporting it, getting mentorship, all of that was already there. I think that is a very, like, it's invaluable, I think, to them. Secondly, the kind of member experience events that we do are very special to them. The fact that we are pet friendly, I think brings a completely different kind of vibe. And, you know, our designs are very thoughtfully done where interactions happen. So you know how the corridors are built and the distance of the wall is done such that you actually will have a moment of interaction with your passerby.
Yeah.
The kind of art that the space has is something that will inspire you. So I think it's, again, it's a mix of a lot of things, but it all comes together so beautifully. I think that's what makes that lies the secret sauce of WeWork.
Right. Obviously, WeWork is growing exponentially in India. The numbers are really healthy. So how does a marketing playbook for WeWork look like with the growth, with the massive growth that you all are looking at?
Let's say the playbook is something we have wanted to create at this point, because, you know, we are growing and we are at the stage where we are constantly experimenting, launching new products and completely doing new things. So I could say that in marketing, we are trying a bunch of new things. I think innovation, we want to be very audacious. We want to be experimental. We want to try new things in tech and whatever new that is out there, we want to adopt those. So for us, I don't think there is a playbook that's there, because typically you think with a global company, you know, you get a playbook and you follow it through. We have actually tried to create our own playbook. We are building it as we go along. There is a lot of work that's happening on how do we want to build the brand going forward, what we want to stand for. We have so many products, right? Like the biggest thing about, I think, WeWork is it is synonymous with co-working. But actually, WeWork provides solution for flexible workspace of any size and any stage. So today, if a person is starting out in their life where they have, they don't even have an office, they just need like a GST registration for an office, we provide something called the virtual office. Then of course you have the day passes, which you've used yourself. And that is something that we do for solo entrepreneurs.
Small teams, like
somebody who just wants to come out and work. Because, see, you go to a cafe, you find so many people going to a cafe and working. But the environment that you get and free coffee for a day pass and that environment and the kind of people you meet.
So for me as a day pass user, it was the meeting rooms. It was designed so comfortably without the noise and, you know, just the kind of sense of space.
Right.
That was really nice.
Right. And, you know, we've also created something called the quiet spaces. We have, because if you see, there is a light music that is there. It adds to the vibe, but there are members who want their own quiet spaces. So we've been able to create quiet spaces where they want to go and do that. So like I said, so then there is something called the All Access Pass that we have, which is pretty much like a co-working membership. Mm. You have a card, you can access 500 locations around the world with that. Then, of course, you have your private office. And I don't know if people know, and our largest part of business comes from private office, where a business size of like 50, 60 people to about 5,000, 6,000 can actually... WeWork can create, give you a space where you can just walk in today and start work. And, you know, even larger, if you want to grow even bigger, we have the managed office business where we pretty much get everything. We build it out for you and we operate for you. So if you see, there is this whole journey. WeWork has solutions for every journey. And if you want, like, you know, sometimes the businesses are so dynamic these days. You want to keep it hybrid in some places. In some cities, you want to have an office space. In some cities, you have some resources who are constantly moving.
Yeah.
WeWork has the capability of bundling all different solutions together, which suits your need the best way. And we also have a SaaS product called Workplace, which helps to optimize, you know, your resourcing. So say you have 100 people team and you want 50, because you want to keep them on rotation, you want to take a 60-seater private office, you can see what's the footfall like. You can actually... It's very advanced. You know, if the team wants to sit together, if you even want to run some employee-friendly programs, you could run through all of that. So if you see, it's a plethora of products. And I think the biggest job of marketing is to be able to tie it all together and tell the story of WeWork and the maturity that it has reached today. And I think the marketing endeavor to do this beautifully, seamlessly, effortlessly, and I think that's really where I think marketing is looking.
So no wonder WeWork calls themselves a tech company rather than a real estate company. That's because people don't know the various options and tech-enabled support that you're able to give for various demands that are there from people. So coming, as a tech company, obviously in marketing also, you would be using a lot of tools, right? So obviously with AI, listening tools, measuring tools, etc. So what are the tools that you, the marketing team at WeWork uses?
So there is, you know, there are lots of tools that are being used across WeWork, like because I think innovation is pretty much in the heart of WeWork. Okay, we are constantly supposed to think innovation, whatever way. So AI, we all know that if you are not adopting it, we are left behind. So right now, I know the team is constantly evaluating a bunch of AI tools constantly, but I know through practice, you also have to see which fits. It's not that because there are 100 tools, everything is of use. So the team is constantly using it, but I know the ones which has really worked and adoption has happened, something called the ScaleNut, which is more with copy, etc. I think it has worked beautifully. I know Figma, like the upgraded Figma, really helped in, like, you know, building out websites, like all of that. ChatGPT, I think, has changed everyone's world. But, you know, it's just not about the tool, right? The more you work with it, the more questions you put in, you know what you need to input to get the right output. I think that's been happening. I think there's another one. I think Gemini, the Bard one, I think it's a AI bot. That is something that we are currently looking at. So actually, these are the names that are coming in my mind because I know they've been adopted, but at any given time, the team is trying out multiple AI tools, and it could be for like designing, it could be for writing, it could be for storyboarding, it could be about putting a design system together. It's a bunch of things, and we are constantly looking at
tools.
How do we optimize and learn what is out there and how can that help us and optimize everyday work. So it's a pretty much everyday exercise.
So, you know, this is a great and yet a very complex time to be in marketing, right? So obviously everything is more real time. There's preparedness for crisis, so much more to learn and upgrade. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are you most excited about in marketing and what's next? Like,
I think tech is what is completely changing way how everything works. So I think that's a piece which will take over marketing, like how well you know the tech that is out there and how well you learn to use it, like AR, VR, those different things that you see on Instagram, how it's just really exciting. But, you know, deep down, I think storytelling has to always remain in the heart of marketing because end of the day, you're communicating to another human.
Yeah.
And it's a human that needs to connect with your brand. Emotion. It's about how quickly you get it. Before, I think that advantage of time and the comfort of time probably is not there for a marketer anymore.
Yeah.
Because everything is moving fast. You're fighting for every second. So how quickly can you land what you want to communicate, I think is going to be critical. And I also think now it's not about just you telling your audience what you're about. It's really about how well you're able to engage in a two-way communication. And that could be through tech, because now tech, there are what are the different ways to do it, but it could also be through very smart marketing campaigns, you know, to really understand the consumer mindset at that point and to be able to, you know, craft your campaigns, your communications around such that you can engage in a two-way conversation, because it's a lot about everyone doesn't look at you as a product. It has to have some meaning in your life. So you don't sell a product, you sell an emotion.
That's true. That's and relevant with whatever number of advancements will
happen. Whatever number of advancement, correct. And that's why I feel that creativity will always be in the heart of as much tech development as is there. You, since your audience is always going to be human till the time I think aliens come in, you know, after watching Three Body Problem, if that changes, we might have to reconsider all these things. But given you're communicating to humans, emotions matter. You should be able to communicate at a very human level for what you want to, what you have to.
Yeah, to reach
offer to them.
Yeah, Debu, you and I have spoken so much about the importance of mental health and talking about how that is the most important thing, you know, to have a great career. And, you know, still not enough has been spoken about it. So, you know, how do you look at supporting your mental health? How do you deal with breakdowns? How does Debu look at all of that?
See, I must say that even I was one of those who did not understand the importance of mental health till the time I struggled with it, okay? So no one, I think that awareness at that point wasn't there to say how you need to take care of yourself, what boundaries you need to draw to protect yourself in an extremely, you know, competitive and a high-pressure environment. So today I can say I have learned a thing or two about the importance of it, but I have myself made my share of mistakes and really not understood how to draw that balance. So because I have gone through that experience, maybe I can say a few things which has helped me. One is career, you should not treat it as a sprint. It is a marathon. If you consider like you want to have a career, it is a little long drawn. So don't try and like pack in too much within a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And if you try to do, you give yourself enough rest to recover also. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing you apply in sports. Like you play, you know, you lift heavy in training or you play a very hard season, you need to have your recovery time, your recovery season. And I think that is applicable even in a corporate career. You cannot be like peaking constantly. So I think taking regular break is important. Second thing, I know people say, you know, work-life balance such that you work from an X time to another time and then after that stay away. Honestly, I don't think in today's day of internet and, you know, the nature of our work, that is completely possible. But I think you can draw certain boundaries. You decide which are important. So, you know, you also have to be very responsible because, right. You know, sometimes in that balance, trying to draw balance, you don't want to be irresponsible with your work. So I think that balance becomes very important. So to know that if you are doing certain things beyond your work hours, you should know they're important and that's why you're doing it. But at the same time, not take stress about it. You're doing it because it's required. How even in your personal life, you do certain things which is out of your everyday routine. I think that's one. The second thing is, I think, you know, we learn from mistakes. I mean, everyone makes mistakes at every level. It's about really learning from it and ensuring that doesn't get repeated. And sometimes we really are very hard on ourselves if we have failed in our own terms or if it's, you know, you're putting out so many things and certain things are not up to the mark. And you can't pull yourself down. You have to always back yourself up. Of course, be cognizant of the mistake and accept it wholeheartedly. But at the same time, be kind to yourself. You're human. And I think it's very important to do that. And the second thing is, I think, have fun. Yeah. You don't have to say work is one and play is another. You can actually have a lot of... You can enjoy your work. Yeah. And if you really enjoy your work and the people you work with, it gets a lot less stressful. Yeah. So I will say, be judicious about what you choose to do and who you choose to do it with. Because these are the people you're spending most of your time with. So it's important that you guys align on certain the levels and when people come together, that like-mindedness of doing like that collective effort can be very enjoyable and take away stress actually. So I think it's very important to find that, the team and the people, surround yourself with the right set of people, support system at work. And also, of course, you will have a life outside of work, but to make life at work enjoyable, it's very important that you choose also judiciously. Third thing is, you know, take those little breaks.
Okay to take breaks. I think people don't just give themselves that. You're constantly performing. And it's okay if 1 year, 1 month, you are not at your peak. Take a break. Do that. Allow yourself that.
Correct. And, you know, talking about break, you know, WeWork has this wonderful thing. Where they have integrated, talking about tech, and this is so beautifully done. They've integrated like a mascot. It's like a panda. And every like, it's very scientifically designed, okay? Maybe it's an hour and a half or 2 hours. It appears on your screen. No matter what, you could be being in a board meeting also or in a major pitch presentation, the panda will come and tell you what to do. It could be, you know, shutting your eyes 5 times or looking away 50 feet away or doing like a rotation of your shoulder. It is so cute. But, and like I'll tell you, please hydrate yourself. Please shut your eyes. Go take a walk. It is lovely.
Oh, this is
it
sweet.
It is one of the sweetest things that WeWork has come. And sometimes just like, you know, you're middle of work and suddenly says... And then you see yourself also just like shutting your eyes because the panda says you should do it. So yes, you know, tech, but done it in a way which is so like...
Relatable.
So relatable. And like you said, oh, it's someone's looking out for you over here. So when I say break, even those mini breaks matter. Yeah, take a breather. Go, you know, that those Xerox machine conversation and coffee machine conversations are real. Go out there, talk to people, because everyone's there, and a little conversation here and there cannot delay you from work.
Mm.
And of course, take a longish break also. It's good to completely get away, reset and come back. That also gives you that another burst of energy to go that extra mile. So a lot of, you know, theory in sports is actually applicable in corporate.
I can see a lot of your anecdotes and examples are so sports related. Our last question, Debo, what advice would you give your younger self?
Actually, I would give three advices to my younger self. First would be fearless, you know. Don't feel scared to say what you believe, you have conviction. Just go out and say it, because what is the worst that can happen? You'll be wrong. But you could be right, and that could actually make a lot of sense overall. So don't just be fearless in what you have to say, your opinion, your thoughts. Be out there. Second thing is, don't second guess yourself. Like, you know, we have this constant, you know, self-doubt, self-deprecation, questioning yourself. I don't think it does any good to anyone. So I would definitely tell myself, don't second guess yourself. Be yourself, be fearless, and have confidence and stand. And if you believe in certain things, just stand by it. And I think third thing would be, ask for what you deserve. Don't feel shy or awkward, or again, maybe the fearlessness and the second guessing also play a role when you can't really ask for what you think you deserve. I think you should just be able to ask for what you think you deserve.
No, those are very, very, you know, valid things you said. I think it comes from the same thread of confidence.
Yeah.
And just like having somebody to tell you that, hey, just be yourself, go out there, don't second guess yourself.
Yeah.
Those things are so beautiful. Yeah.
They are very important. And I think a lot of us, it takes others to tell us your work.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to
be saying that,
believe in your own self-worth. And if it's truly there, you can be a lot more, I don't know, fulfilled. I don't know if I say fulfilled would make sense, but you live with a lot more conviction.
Yeah.
I think a lot more conviction. And yeah, I think sooner than later.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone in their journey reaches that. Yeah. But I think from the very start, if you do it, you just come out as a, you blossom early.
Debo, it's beautiful what you said. And I think there are so many people who just need to hear this at a younger age when they're joining their career, and beautifully articulated.
Thank you so much. I don't know. I tried. I know I speak a lot, so I might have overspoken in some
places.
No,
the conversation today was just such all heart. And I love the fact that everything that you did, you kind of went back to the backstory, what it made you feel. And I think that makes this conversation so much more special. And thank you for sharing so much.
I'm glad it was. Yeah, I actually enjoyed reliving those moments, because, you know, every day with your own things, task, routine, you don't get to sit and reflect. And I think this session, more than being a podcast conversation, it was a bit of reflection about those moments which brought a lot of joy, excitement, and melancholy.
Yeah, it's like catching up like old
times.
Yeah,
it's nice. It's lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.